Welcome to the NFB of Indiana. Today we are talking about sports options for the blind in Indiana. And we're going to be talking about blind hockey, talking with Brittany Montgomery later about her efforts to start a cricket team for the blind in Indiana and hopefully maybe throughout the U.S. And if we have some folks in here later, we'll even talk about some blind bowling leagues up in the Indianapolis area and maybe elsewhere. But let's start with the Thunder. Let's see who we have here representing the team. I believe we have Mr. Ron Brown, who's a coach. Good morning, Ron. Afternoon.
Hi there.
And
hi,
Zach.
Hi, how you doing?
Zach plays on our team, one of our starters, and he also is a gold ball Olympic champion. So we'll have to have him talk about gold ball, too. But I definitely want him to talk about deep baseball and what it means to him. So why don't we let Zach start?
I started playing gold ball in 2016. Actually, the very end of 2015. I found it through my mom, actually, who met somebody while she was Christmas shopping up in Fort Wayne. And we were told that the USA men's gold ball team was training for the Rio 2016 Paralympics there, up at Turnstone Center for Children and Adults with Disabilities. So I went up there and kind of just tried it out, checked it out, fell in love with it instantly. I've always been an athlete. Once I lost my vision at 12, it really became hard. I still tried to play, you know, basketball and stuff in high school, but it was just very difficult, you know, being the only person that couldn't see the ball on the court. But I found goal ball and really fell in love with it. Started training with Team USA, helping them get to the Paralympics. And unfortunately, I'm not an Olympic champion yet. I'm working towards it. Hopefully, I was on track to make the 2020 Tokyo team this year, but obviously that got pushed back with coronavirus. So hopefully in 2021, we'll be ready to go and ready to bring that home. But I've been playing since 2016 now, won my first USABA national championship in 2019. And then I started actually playing with the Thunder. That's how I found deep baseball was actually through goal ball. Met Darnell Booker and he asked me if I wanted to win a couple rings and come play for him. So I went down there and always loved baseball and just fell in love with the game ever since. So those are my two favorite sports as of now.
So how many teams are there, the goal ball teams throughout the country?
So in goal ball, we have about 20 teams total, men's and women's, clubs throughout the U.S. Each team ranges from having three people to usually around four or five people on a team. So there's usually eight women's teams, and then we'll have about anywhere from 12 sometimes to 14 men's teams playing in our nationals. So we have a bunch of regional tournaments everywhere. This year we had Columbus, Ohio tournament beginning of March. We had Phoenix, Arizona tournament in the beginning of January, and a couple other ones that are kind of everywhere. But obviously, you know, with the virus and everything, stuff has gotten canceled. And so far our season's still on the line. We still have our national scheduled for the end of July, but we'll see how all that goes.
Okay, so how many folks play in Indiana?
In Indiana, our training center is actually in Fort Wayne. So anyone is welcome to come check it out. We do a lot of demos. We put on a lot of things. Anyone who really wants to come check it out. We also do a lot of travels to different schools. We've come to Indy a few times, actually to do some demos at Carmel and different schools like that. So that's where we train. Specifically, there's a few that, you know, a few kids that I know that still play at the blind school or did play at the blind school. But as I really know, like around the U.S., there are only a couple or a handful from Indiana, including myself, that play goalball.
Okay, one final question for you. Give a brief, basic description of how the game is played, what the rules are, what your objectives are.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's three players on each side of the court. Everyone is blindfolded to even the playing field. I'm pretty sure just like any blind sport where you are relying on your ears. Obviously, hockey's a little different. But anyway, goal ball, three players on each side of the court. The court is 18 meters long and it's 9 meters wide. It's a metric volleyball court. And there's a 4 foot high hockey net that spans each baseline of the court. So what we're doing is we're laying on the ground and the ball is just about 3 pounds, a little bigger in a basketball and has bells inside. So we're rolling the ball along the ground to try to get it past the defense. And as a defense, the three of us on the team are trying to get our body in front of the ball to try to block it so it doesn't go in the net. So we get around by using the sound of our teammates communicating, listening for the ball, you know, using the goal. And then all the lines underneath the court actually have some sort of string or some sort of wire underneath so we can tactically feel where we're at as well.
All right, great. Thanks a lot, Zach. feel free to join us throughout the event here. I want to turn to Darnell Booker, and let's talk about four times now you guys have brought the trophy home here. And so I want to understand, you know, what is it that makes your team that awesome? I mean, obviously you've got great hitters and fielders, and there must be some damn good coaching in there somewhere. But so let's talk about the Indy Thunder and kind of what you've accomplished, and explain, if there's anyone new that's listening to this later, we're recording it and it'll be posted, kind of how Beat Baseball works.
Thanks for having me. My name is Darnell Booker, the general manager and head coach of the Indy Thunder, and Ron Brown is my top assistant offensively on the team. Our team has been around since 2000. Of course, I've known Ron Brown. I got introduced to Beat Baseball in 1985 as last year of high school, and played beat ball from like 85, like 97. That's where I met Ron. So Ron Brown and I've been knowing Ron Brown for over 30 years. And because Ron has been in the sport since 1982, something like that. But Beat Baseball is a sport played on soccer field or on any outfield of a baseball diamond. But the majority of us played on a flat field, soccer field preferably. And there's two bases at the corners, first and third, and they're 10 feet off the fair line. So they're little 5 foot, 4 foot pylon tackles, as people would say. And they have, and the bases buzz. And then there's this, like a pound, 16 inch softball, about a pound. And that has old telephone sounds in it, parts in it. So the ball beeps continuously. And the sport was started in 1975. The first World Series is 1976. It is not quite an international sport as far as the Paralympics goes and USABA goes, but it is an international sport because there's about 35 U.S. teams and about 4 or 5 international teams, and there are teams cropping up all the time. But our team, I played on the 1990 team, World Championship team, that team was a different regime, and it was called the Indy Eagles. So Indianapolis has experienced the championship before, but I sat down with Ron and I. Like I said, Ron's been with me for duration, and I said, Ron, we've been like playing so many years together. So I said, Ron, I think I just want to start my own team, and would you be a part of it and help me with it? So it just kind of grew and grew from there. And then the reason why our team has been pretty successful, it starts at the top. We're not just a beatball team. We are an organization per se. I'm not saying we're a pro team or whatever, but it's definitely an organization because it's on the field and off the field things that we do to make our team go as a well-oiled machine. So you got to have the proper people in place, whether it be, because this is a non-for-profit sport, it's a volunteer sport, nobody gets paid, it's a labor of love, and it's my labor of love, it's my passion, it's probably going to be my legacy, because I'm very passionate about it, as people said to me before, I eat, sleep, and drink beat ball, probably 365, so, and like I said, I think once we've always had, and this for youth and adults, you know, but basically if you can get out there and hold your own and do what you got to do, then you can basically play. Like I said, our fortunes changed in 2016 when I decided to go younger and with our team. And like I said, when I went up there to see Zach, I met him through one of our guys that was already playing on our team, Eric Rodriguez. Eric played a little gold ball, but Eric said, hey, I think I have a friend named Zach Bueller that wants to play beat ball. So what I did, I went up there for Wayne, pitched it to Zach, and I showed Zach my 1990 ring. I said, Zach, would you like to try to help us get one of these rings? And then ever since Zach has played on our team and everybody else is on our team, we've won championships. And then, like I said, it's the commitment and working on their craft. And like I said, good coaching. I have a good coaching staff, because I have a defensive coordinator. And you also have to have a pitcher, because the pitcher is on the same team as the batter. And they have to work on their timing because the pitcher has a cadence that he says to the batter. And then the pitcher also has to have a nice catcher that can show the target. So everybody works together on everything. So, and I think for winning a championship, you just got to be pulling. Everybody has to hold on to the rope and be on that same page. I mean, yes, you're going to have your ups and downs and your battles, and you just try to keep all that stuff in house
And I, like I said, I was only hoping for one championship, but four is amazing. And I always say this, you know, it's just amazing. I pinch myself every day with the titles that we have and just the good people that you have, whether it be volunteers. And also the sponsorship is very important. Building relationships. I say building relationships is very, very important. So, and how beat ball works in a nutshell, basically, it's a race between the batter and the defenders. And there's also spotters on the defensive side. The spotters can see the ball comes off the bat, and the defense plays different zones on the field, and the field is all lined up like a baseball field. There's a 40-foot arc, and then there's an outfield, and then we mark X's where the players on defense stand, and the spotters cues the defense where the ball goes. So when the ball is hit, the spotter calls a particular zone, then it's up to the defense to work together and communicate to try to pick up that ball before the batter runs to the random base, either first or third, that beat. So again, if the batter gets to the beeping base before the fielder tracks the ball, scores a run for his team. If the fielders track the ball and have possession of it before the batter gets to one of the random bases, it's an out. We play six innings, and there's extra innings. There's no ties. Everybody wears a blindfold, no matter if they're blind or visually impaired, just to make the playing field equal. And we have base operators. We have scorekeepers. So, and like I said, and here in Indiana, we have two teams here in Indianapolis. Our team is based on the north side of town. And then we have the Indy Edge is based on the south side of town out of Greenwood, Indiana. And a lot of those guys that formed the Indy Edge came from the Indy Thunder, which we totally respect. And there was a different philosophy, what they wanted to do. So it's kind of fortunate that we have two teams here in town. And anybody can play. I mean, we try to say our team is from, you know, nothing against the Edge or anything like that. I have total respect for them, but Indy Thunder is anybody. We recruit from all over the state of Indiana. We try to keep, and then whether if your job leaves you, like if you have, we have some people that, like for instance, Zach, you know, his profession moved him to South Carolina, but he's still an Indiana native from Marion, Indiana. We have some people that, you know, that work and have moved to San Francisco, but they're still on our team because their job or their profession moved them there. But we try to stay within the rims of the whole state of Indiana. We feel like we can recruit either by the blind school, word of mouth, BOSMA, whatever, to try to get young talent and talent that can play on our team and mesh. So I think having that cohesiveness and knowing each other and being from the state of Indiana, our team, that's how I feel like we've been successful. And then, like I said, without volunteers, beatball wouldn't happen. And without the relationships of sponsorships, that couldn't happen as well. And I'm open for questions if anybody has any, but that's, I hope I explained it pretty well for your audience.
Okay, what I think I'm going to do is go through all the sports and go back through for questions to make it a little easier if you guys can stay the whole hour. But let's talk about the not only commitment in terms of time, number of games, practices, and so forth, but I really want to focus on the cost. What is one season? What does 1 year cost you? And how do you raise the money to make that happen?
Well, it varies from season to season. You got to really have a commitment to fundraise. It's about fundraising. And again, going out and getting sponsorship and building relationships, whether it be in-kind donations or financial donations. So we have an indoor facility that is given to us because it's an in-kind donation. If you amounted to that, it would be about $6,000. And we don't have that in our budget, so it's an in-kind donation. And then also getting the fields and stuff, you know, those are in-kind donations. Again, building relationships throughout the city or a couple of schools we have. And I would say basically for a whole season, depending on what beat balls you got to do, blindfolds, whatever. So anywhere between 30 to 40,000, is to run to kind of, it would be your budget for the year. I mean, and we go that takes care of regional tournaments that we have to pay. We kind of help our team, you know, with hotel rooms. The big expense is the World Series because we're there for about a week or so, 7 to 10 days. So that takes a lot of out of that budget with the World Series being 7 to 10 days and things and expenses like that. So to probably for a season, it costs between, I think, to fundraise every year between 30 to 40,000 to fundraise.
Okay, and now with COVID-19, are you even going to have a season this year? And if so, how would you offer practice?
Our season's already been canceled because of COVID. We'll know in a couple of weeks if the World Series is going to go on in late July, early August. And we're hoping we have a couple tournaments in late June and one in July. So our team usually have four tournaments and a World Series. That's a lot of travel. And it's basically somewhere around the Midwest. We went to San Antonio, Texas before several times. Yeah, half of our season has been canceled, so we're just crossing our fingers that we have a season. If not, they have some teams have offered to do some things in the fall, depending on the virus, so we'll see what happens. But no, like I always tell our organization, you know, fundraising happens 365, and I believe that, because that way, I mean, it puts your team in a better position for the following year. You still do your budget, you still do this, you still do that. And we want to, and like I said, we open up our team to in our mission statement to youth and adults that are economically challenged or whatever. And, you know, we try to meet them halfway. There's things that they have to pay to get their money in, to pay their dues, because we have team dues. We have this, that, and the other. But we do, I mean, all that stuff is we help. We have what I do with my team, I have a donation letter and I have a brochure that I give to a lot of my sponsors or even people that don't know the game. And it tells all their information on there. So that's how we get a lot of support, because of our donation letter and our brochure. So, yes, hopefully, yeah, COVID-19 has canceled half of our season, but we're holding out hope that we get our second half of our season in.
Now, if they told you that you could play but have no crowd, would you do that? Would that be a good thing?
We're good with that, because our sport is don't have, quote-unquote, thousands and thousands of people around. It can have the essentials. I mean, we've had, you know, because beatball is about family and everything, mothers, fathers, cousins, whatever, aunts or whatever. If they just say, hey, I mean, because we stream our games live on Facebook. People have Facebook live streams, or you can get it on the NBBA website or Beatball Nation or what have you. There's games. So we could play it without fans, sure, because we look at, I mean, what's probably in our favor when we make that decision about the World Series, that MLB is probably going to come back the first weekend of July. And I know we're not a professional league and we don't get paid. Nobody gets paid in beat baseball, but they're doing it without fans and with putting proper precautions in, like sanitizing, making sure this, that, and the other is done. You know, health wise, things of that nature. So I'm prepared. I've prepared my team. If, you know, we can play without fans, to answer your question.
Okay, great. I'm going to interview Daniel here about hockey and talk to Brittany about, then we'll come back and take questions from everyone and see what folks have on their minds. So thank you for joining us today. But hang tight. Daniel Belding, let's talk about blind hockey. What that is, how it started, the rules, and how many folks in Indiana are playing.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me today. So blind hockey actually started in Canada back in the 70s, I believe around 1972. And it was really unorganized for a while. Every team had their own set of rules, had their own modified puck they used. Some people had a tuna can with nuts and bolts in it. Other people had a full coffee can with you know, chains in it just to make noise. So they actually played, instead of three periods like a normal hockey game, they played in four periods, where they played with one puck and one set of rules for half the game. Another puck, another set of rules for the other half of the game. And this wasn't going well. A lot of rivalries, a lot of bad blood between the team. And it wasn't until 2010 that Matt Morrow, who's the director of international blind hockey, got all the teams together in Canada, came up with a, you know, one set of rules that decided on one puck they use. Our puck is about twice the size of a typical hockey puck. It's 5.5 inches in diameter and 2 inches tall. It's a hollow black steel shell with 8 ball bearings in it. So for some of the players that are have higher vision in the B3 level, they're able to see the contrast of the puck on the ice. And for lower vision players in the B2, B1 range, can hear the pucks that's moving. And U.S. got blind hockey in 2014. A guy that used to live out here in Indianapolis, he lives in New York now, but he went out to Canada to play in a tournament. And he's infamously now known as the American, because he was the only one to ever show up to play. And after he played in a tournament in 2014, he came back to the States and started a team in New York. And then since then, now we have about 15 teams across the country. That range from some teams only have about 3 or 4 players, other teams have about 20 players. The one thing that's different with blind hockey than most sports is we practice as a team. You know, here in Indianapolis, we have our team. We practice together. We work on things together. We go to tournaments to make sure the playing field's more even. We'll have an open ice scrimmage or skills practice where the coaches can kind of talk about what their players are good at, what players are at what level of skating and hockey ability, and that way we can split them up on a different team. So it really builds a community across the nation and through the Canadians as they come down to our tournaments, we go to theirs. Just be playing with different people at every tournament, really getting to know each other, you know, playing against friends, just keeping everybody going. The big differences between typical hockey and blind hockey are obviously our players have to be legally blind. Our goals are a foot shorter, so our goalies are required to be B1s, which are the totally blind athletes. That position is only for them. And so to keep the pucks kind of down lower and out of their face, they've dropped the goal down a foot shorter. And then also you have to make one pass once you enter the offensive zone. So the referee will blow an electronic whistle once the pass has been made, which lets the goalie know that shots are about to come. And really besides that, those are the only modifications that are made. We're a non-checking league. Obviously, there's some contact that's made. And it's kind of up to the ref's discretion on if it was an intentional hit or it was just two people skating that, you know, didn't see each other. Our uniforms, we wear, one team will wear a dark jersey. The other team will wear a bright yellow, usually, for a jersey, try to give some contrast for the players that have some vision. You can't tell the difference between it, but it really is based on a lot of communication. We're talking to your teammates to kind of understand what's going on, where the puck is. The goalie's constantly making noise. That's the big point of reference. I play defense, so the goalie's always talking to me so I can keep myself centered on the goal. Then I'm communicating out to the offense so they know where everything is, and being able to play together in that way. I started playing blind hockey in 2018. I was teaching at the Colorado Center for the Blind as an orientation and mobility instructor, and got an email that asked if we wanted to participate in a blind hockey event. And I played hockey growing up. I've always been legally blind, but played sighted hockey growing up from age 6 to 15. And at age 15, I decided it was time to focus on more less visual sports. Hockey was just getting to move too fast, and team was more using me as a goon than anything else, and I wanted to be a real contributing player to the team. So I focused more on wrestling and football, and did bull riding for a while, and thought my hockey career was over. And then 2018 was able to help, you know, run the first blind hockey event in Colorado, partnering with the Colorado Avalanche, the professional team out there. It went great. We had over 40 participants there from ages 6 to 75. Everybody really enjoyed themselves. Had some of the Avs players come out and join us and have fun. They tried on different glasses and blindfolds to try to play with different visual disabilities and kind of get an understanding of what we were doing. And then in the same year, I played my first tournament out in Chicago and was offered to try out for the first USA blind hockey team, and was honored to be able to make that team and named the assistant captain of the team in our inaugural season. And so we've had 2 years now with Team USA. My wife and I moved back to Indiana a couple of years ago, and first thing we did was start the Indiana blind hockey program. We've had about 10 people come out so far to try. We've had about 6 people consistently coming out to play. Our youngest player is 11 years old. I think our oldest player is probably has tried to spend around 50. And really our goal is to, I mean, hockey can be a really expensive sport. There's a lot of gear you wear. It can be really expensive. And we've been really blessed with the hockey community out here in Indianapolis and the surrounding areas where people are donating gear, going out and buying brand new gear and donating that. We got, you know, tons of skates, full gear, so our players don't have to worry about the cost of gear when they come into play. We can dress them out in gear. We have a partnership with the Rehab Hospital of Indiana as sponsorships to help us with travel costs and hotels and things for our players as we travel across the country and into Canada to play in games. And we actually partner with our local sled hockey program, which is for people with physical disabilities. They just finished their first season, and we have a nonprofit together with them. It's where we're able to have sled hockey on half the ice for practice, and the other half of the ice we have blind hockey playing. And it's really nice to kind of have, you know, cross disability awareness. We're out there playing together. We can share in grant fundraising and work together to build disabled hockey.
Well, great. I think you answered about everything there. I was going to ask you maybe one more quick question. Go through the gearing up for the event.
Yeah, so just basically starting out, you're gonna wear everybody's gonna wear a jock, and then you're gonna have your shin pads, which go from your ankles, and it's actually a shin pad knee pad combos. It's kind of like what a catcher would wear in typical baseball. So it's gonna cover your from your ankle all the way up to your knee. Your ice skates, they're gonna be solid around the side, so when the puck hits, it doesn't hurt your feet or anything. They go up above your ankle, so you tie those nice and snug, so it keeps the ankle stability in there. there. And then you have your hockey pants, which are called breezers, and it's got pads across the thighs and the hips and on your butt, just to protect you from sticks and falling down the ice. Then you're wearing shoulder pads. It has a chest protector, back protector, and shoulder pads on it. Elbow pads, wearing gloves that are padded. And then you're wearing a helmet with either a face shield, which is like a plastic shield with a plastic grid at the bottom for your breathing, or you can wear a metal cage, which is just a metal grid cage that goes over your helmet.
Okay, and what about COVID? Will you be able to play any this year?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we've been planning to host the first ever Midwest blind hockey event here in Indiana, down in Greenwood, actually, at Perry Park Ice Rink. And due to COVID, we had to cancel that. We've had that rescheduled now for beginning of December is our goal right now, just depending on what happens. The season's played between October and March, so we're hoping that by the time everything will be kind of settled down, we'll be able to get back into the ice rinks. Hopefully, as soon as things open up, we're going to try to do some monthly events throughout the summer once the rinks start opening again, and then we'll kick the season off in probably mid-September, beginning of October. Our first scheduled tournament in America is the Blind Hockey Classic, which is being held in St. Louis this year, middle of October. And then we'll have the regional blind hockey event here that we're hosting in Indiana in December, hopefully.
All right, great. Thank you, Daniel. Like I said, we'll take questions for everyone here shortly. I want to go to Brittany Montgomery, and she has an initiative. She has a lot of interest in international activities and sporting, and she would like to get started cricket in the U.S., which is not very common here. So, Brittany, why don't you talk about that? What are you hoping to do?
Okay. So, yeah, I had the idea based on because of the international travel that I've done, and see this how big the sport is internationally, and we don't have a team here. And I just thought it would be really interesting to start something that's a little less traditional. There is the World Blind Cricket Council that was started. So that is, it's a very established organization that supports the 10 members that are recognized by the World Blind Cricket Council, which I listed them off in the email. But just to name a few, there's England, there's Nepal, Bangladesh, Pakistan, West Indies, South Africa, Sri Lanka,
Okay, so let me ask you a couple questions. First of all,
yeah.
I think first explain how the game of cricket is played, since most of us wouldn't know that.
Okay, so a lot of people like to compare it to baseball, which is kind of frustrating because it's different. So basically what it is you have two, what they're called, like wickets or stumps. It's like an oval shaped ground with a pitch in the middle so that the ball can roll easily. So think of it like a clock, okay? And you have like a batsman at 6 o'clock, and you'll have what was called a bowler at 12 o'clock, okay? And then you'll have the wicket behind the batsman, and you'll have a wicket behind the bowler, okay? And then depending on how people bat, so for example, like if you have a batter who tends to swing more to the left or more to the right, you'll have a setup of three people blocking that area too. And then you'll have fielders, of course, surrounding that boundary, the boundary, okay, of the opposite team, of course. So each team consists of 11 members, and you'll have categories just like blind hockey, B1, B2, and B3. You'll have four B1 players, three B2, and four B3, okay? And basically what happens is you'll have 190 balls that will be thrown or rolled. Actually, it's underarm, and the batsman will have to, what you'll do is you'll have a runner on one wicket and a runner on the other wicket, and basically when the ball is hit, both runners have to run through the wickets and touch the wickets before the ball is not just caught in the field, but also you have to take the ball and make sure that it is in contact with the wicket first before the person is out. And what happens is, so for example, like if one runner makes it to the wicket but the other runner doesn't, and the ball is hit, then that person is out, not both, just that one runner. And then you replace him, and you keep doing that, and it keeps going until all 10 members are through. So it can be a very long game. It's 190 balls. That's a lot. It can take about, usually one game takes about 3 hours.
Yeah, but what a minute. Okay. So what is it going to take to make this happen? Are you going to have at least two teams, 22 people, or, you know, how are you going to, what is your vision to make this happen?
Yeah, so one great thing is that I have a lot of support from the international community. And this is, you do have a lot of countries who have local, you know, teams, but, you know, to be able to play internationally, you don't necessarily have to have a bunch of local teams. So even if we had one well-established team here in the U.S., it's not so difficult to be recognized by the World Blind Cricket Council. The other thing is that I do have Ohio on board as well. So if we can even get a few teams started just in that, you know, in this region, that would be, you know, it'd be excellent.
Okay, so how are you going to make that happen? You going to do a Facebook campaign? Do you have a website? How are you going to group people and market and get the info out?
Yeah. Well, you know, just like, definitely a lot of networking, you know, getting the word out there through, you know, like it could be through Facebook, it could be through emails, it could be through personal, you know, contacts. Just, you know, just like any other typical networking, really just trying to get it out there. And the other thing I was planning on doing is hoping to start my own little, or create my own Zoom meeting at some point and to bring members from the international community from different aspects. So, for example, like bring a member who just a regular, you know, a blind cricketer or someone from the management side, a woman, because they do have women's teams as well, and how those were started. Because what makes this so interesting is how some of these teams have gotten started based on their cultural aspects. So it's really amazing to hear their stories on how they got started, because when you take culture into the matter, you'll be really surprised how significantly different it is in the U.S., not only from, you know, I mean, just even as a blind person, you know, especially I'm going to take Pakistan, for example, because I've been there many times. It's a third world country. So you have a lot of people who they're not familiar with blindness. And they don't have a lot of laws put in place for blind people. You know, they don't have a lot of the same accommodations that we have or, you know, organizations that support them. So cricket for them is like their whole life. So it really gives them the opportunity to show themselves that they have a purpose, they have a dream, and it gives them the opportunity to travel. They have a very well-established team, and they have a very well-established funding, you know, organizations that support them.
So how much money is this going to take to make happen if you're going to be doing international play?
It would take a lot, of course, but to get started, I've talked to the general manager of the World Blind Cricket Council, so they're very supportive, and I've also talked to the chairman of the Pakistan Blind Cricket Council, and they've already agreed to give us equipment to get started. So the biggest thing right now is to try and get people together to agree with this, because there's a lot of things that can take place following this, but we can't do it until we actually have people who are willing to agree, because otherwise we have the equipment to get us started. We also have people who are on board to come and coach cricket for a week, like a camp, you know, like a every day to coach. So that's one really cool advantage of this, is that we do have a lot of support. The other thing about going internationally is the people who are hosting you, they'll be hosting obviously your lodging and, you know, the expenses for the food and stuff. So you would have to, you know, just have your expenses for your travel. So that's also a plus. This isn't something that could, you know, happen overnight, of course, but to have the support, you know, to have people like that in the other community, international community, to support and to encourage is really helping me a lot. So really it's just a matter of getting the word out there and really trying, you know, to get this rolling, because the biggest thing is to get committed people on a team right now.
Okay, so since many people play multiple sports, what time of year would this happen for practice and actual play?
It happens. My husband would be better at answering this question. He's been a cricketer for 10 years, but they practice pretty much all year around. We'd make sure that it doesn't interfere with, you know, other sports that are going on. If we were to have a team here, it's okay that, you know, if people are playing multiple, you know, sports, like it's not like, oh, well, I'm playing b-ball, so I can't play cricket, or I'm playing blind hockey, so I can't, you know what I'm saying?
Right. I just didn't know what time of year the actual games would take place. Is there a time that the countries come together? the 10 countries come together and have like a World Series or something like that? Or
oh yeah, they have World Cup that typically takes place. Let me shoot that question about that. Najee, what time of the year does the World Cup usually take place? What time of the year?
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that sounds awesome. Let's. I'm going to move on here and take questions. And but please stay with us here, and maybe some folks will have some other concerns. One more quick thing before we do questions: are there any? Is there anyone here that's involved in any of the bowling leagues here in Indiana? Any blind bowlers in the house? I should have maybe specifically recruited a couple to talk about that. But if not, then we'll. Okay. Hearing nothing, I think we're going to go ahead and take questions. Now, to make this roll smoothly, I will ask you to either state your first name, and then we can call on you in turn. That way, if three or four have a question, we can get to each of you. You could also raise your hand by pressing Alt Y on the computer, *9 on your phone, or on the iPhone Zoom app, you can do that as well. I did see Abby's hand pop up earlier, so I'm going to call on her. I think she had a question. If you're there, Abby.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Abby, and my question was for Daniel. Do you have to – I know you said you guys go into Canada to play. Mm-hmm. Do you have to have a passport then?
Yes, you do have to have a passport when we travel internationally.
Are those hard to get?
No, you just go down to the you can go down to the post office, is what I did, and you have to fill out some paperwork. They'll help you fill it out there, and they take your picture, and I think you have to take down some just different, just like you were to get a license or an ID, like your birth certificate, and just some information that says you are who you are. And it takes about, I think it takes about 6 weeks or so for the passport to come in, but it's not too difficult of a process. You can just go down to the post office and get it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And I suppose if someone were receiving SSDI or government payments, I don't know if they'd be suspended during that month when they left the country. But
when we travel, we're usually gone. Our tournaments usually last 3 to 4 days.
Right.
So when you're out of the country, I mean, we're not being paid. We're not doing anything. So it's just like going on a vacation. So you still maintain everything.
Exactly. Okay. Any other questions concerning anything, either be baseball, blind hockey, or Brittany's efforts to get the cricket team started? Ron, go ahead, sir.
Hi, yes. Mike, I know you asked the question about blind bowling. I am on the bowling league, and I can give a brief synopsis of our bowling league. I was trying to unmute, but you got to be smarter than a mute button, and unfortunately, I'm probably lacking. So anyway, I finally be going to get unmuted, and I'll just tell you a little bit about the Indianapolis Blind Bowling League. That is that we start our season in August, and we go up until April. And we bowl over here at the All-Star Bowling Alley, and we have about 10 teams with four people on a team. And so we have about 40 people out there every Thursday, and we've been bowling now on this league, Gene and I, for about 25 years now. And this league has been around since the 1960s, actually, I'm told, and probably before the and maybe the 50s. But anyway, it's one of the older leagues in the country, and it is all over the country, blind bowling leagues. And we have national tournaments, and there's a mid-year tournament for blind bowlers, and they're held in different states. And then our tournament that we attend was to be held in Ohio this year. I believe they canceled it because it's supposed to come up around Memorial Day. Anybody interested in the Blind Bowling League here in Indianapolis area, you have to pay your bowling fees of about $38, and then you have to pay $15 each week to bowl. Now, that's whether you're there or not. So you have to pay $15 a week to bowl. Of course, you get your own shoes and your own ball. They do at the bowling league have shoes, but most people bring their own instead of renting the shoes. Like I said, on Thursday nights from 6 o'clock to about 8:30 every Thursday. And it's a lot of fun. All ages are welcome to bowl on our league. This is just another activity to get exercise to the blind. Oh, and I also should say that this league is not only blind, but it's blind and sighted bowlers on the team. But if you have like three sighted people on your team, you must have a blind person on your team in order to be considered a blind bowling league.
Okay, so then someone's keeping track of the score, and so people know how things are being tallied?
Yeah. Someone on your team or someone on the other team that you're bowling against is keeping track of the scores, and we bowl three games a night. Again, that's $15 a night, but we bowl three games, and then and that's it. And then you keep track of who's in first place, second place, third place. First place gets a trophy or a medallion of some sort, and it's really a lot of fun.
So what is a typical score for our blind bowlers? What's the range?
I have known people to go from maybe have 30 as to finish the night as up to a blind bowler getting 200 and, close to 200. One guy got like 157, and that's really good for a totally blind bowler. You have some sighted, partially sighted bowlers that range in the 140s and the 180s. But for a totally blind bowler to get like 150 and above, that's impressive, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, I saw a hand from LaRon Carter.
Yes, Brother Ron, on the bowling, do they use a guide, or do the sighted people help with guiding to the lane? Do they use bumper guards? Do they use a rail? Or
is there any adaptive
equipment?
Uh-huh. Yes, it is. We do have blind bowling. We do have the bowling rails. Now, these rails are run along the runway of the lane. So they run from the start of the lane when you step up onto the lane, and then they run all the way to the foul line, and that's where they stop. And so you can guide rails. You can guide yourself down there. You can run and hold on to the rail and then let the ball fly, or you can guide. They don't have that. We don't use the bumper rails inside the gutters that keep the ball from going in the gutters. But so for the most part, you can guide yourself down the rail and let fly, or you can not use it at all and just, try your luck at just going down there straight, then letting go. Most people don't carry their canes down there, because if you stick your cane in the gutter and go across the foul line, it'll be that you filed. And so that's points taken away from your game.
And you train new people that never bowled before, or maybe you haven't done it for 30 years, and help them with the technique?
Yeah. We have people in our league that'll help those who are brand new out, and it's really good.
Any other questions here? Just go ahead and state your name.
Paul Howard from California.
Yes, sir. What's your question today?
Question for Dan. Dan, is there a blind hockey league or team in Colorado, the Denver proper area?
Yes, there is. I actually got to help start that team back in 2018. It's the Colorado Visionaries. They're on Facebook, and you can contact them. If you look up Colorado Visionaries on the Facebook, they'll be on there.
Okay, any other questions?
This is Ron. Mike, I have a question for Brittany. Brittany, with the cricket. Now, I know you hit a ball or several balls, I understand you to say. And after you hit the ball, are the fielders that's trying to get the ball, are they blindfolded? And does the person that hits the ball in cricket, do they run to the base or not?
Okay. So for example, if you're a B1, which is totally blind, you do not run to the wicket because you have two people running at the same time. But what you will have is you'll have a runner that will run for you. So as far as the fielders, anybody playing in the field, but the categories stay the same. Not everybody is blindfolded. So if you're B3, you're B2, but the rules do differ depending on what category you're in to make it more, fair. If you are a B1, you do, you throw the ball, you can play in the field and you can bat. You just don't run to the wicket, when you're batting.
Okay. We'll give each of you a chance because maybe folks would like to help contribute financially. If anybody would like to, I don't know if Darnell or Ron, we have to talk about how folks can contribute to support B Baseball, the Thunder or the Edge. I guess you can talk about the Thunder, since you have a website.
Yeah, we have. You can do our website, thunderbeatball.org. Also, you can email myself, and I'll give you my email, because we don't have a PayPal button on there or anything like that, just to know about our team. But I'll just give you my email if you want to learn about, because we can send you our donation letter, and we can send you a brochure, and it has everything on there about how to donate. But if anybody wants to pursue that, they can, my email is Booker, lowercase Booker, B-O-O-K-E-R, and the letter D. So it's Booker D, then the underscore sign, then the number 23 at yahoo.com. And I can send you our donation letter and a brochure about Indy Thunderbird. You can visit our website to check it out. We still got some things to do that we just got it redone. So it's thunderbeepball.org. That's thunder, all one word, thunder, then beep, B-E-E-P, ball, B-A-L-O.org.
And I assume they can email you as well if they want to play. Maybe.
Sure. I mean, we can give you guys, like I said, right now, our roster is closed, but I'm willing to give them information. I can, talk to if they may want to be with the Edge, but I mean, doesn't mean our roster will be closed next season. But, if they want to learn more about it or get some instruction on playing and stuff like that, I'll be glad to help them in any way, shape, or form I can.
All right. Daniel, do you want to give info if people want to contact you or get involved in blind hockey a little further?
Yeah, so our you can contact us through our email at indianablindhockey@gmail.com. We also have a website with our sled hockey program, which is indydisabledhockey.org. We're also on Facebook at Indiana Blind Hockey. And if anybody wants to come out and try, we have great coaches there. I'm one of the coaches and players for the team. Whether you know how to skate or not, we'll get you geared up. Just let us know in advance. We can make sure we have the proper size of gear ready for you when we get there. And we'll do some dry land work off the ice, learning how to walk in the skates and move around it until you feel comfortable. And then we'll step on the ice. And it's for people that if you just want to learn how to skate, you're more than welcome to come out just to learn to skate. If you want to strap on all the gear and go out and play hockey as well, we're more than happy to teach everybody from learning to play, learning to skate, learning to play, everything. One thing to remember with blind hockey is, we leave our canes off the ice and we take our sticks out there. The stick just becomes your new cane. So you're able to shoreline around the rink, to go along the boards. You're able to talk to the players, keep your stick out in front of you like you would your cane to, know where you're going and everything. So yeah, just reach out and talk to us on, like I said, Facebook at Indiana Blind Hockey or email us, indianablindhockey@gmail.com.
All right,
can
great.
Can I be remiss real quick? We have the Indy Thunder as a Facebook page. It's Indy Thunder Beatball, and you can follow us on Twitter at Thunder Beatball. So we're on Twitter and we're on Facebook. So, yeah, yes. And you can follow me on Facebook as well. I do a lot of stuff promoting the team with Indy Thunder, but we also have a Facebook as well. So thank you.
Yeah, great, great. That's a great way to stay up on current events. Ron, how can folks, if they want to become a bowler, how can they do that? Who should they contact?
Well, our president, his name is Chris Light, and I don't have his phone number. However, if you contact me, I can get you in touch with him, and we'd be happy to have you come out. Again, our season starts in August, and we generally have a bowling party, if you will, over one of our members' homes. And we start up new teams. We sign up new people that want to bowl with us. So people can reach me at rb15@iquest.net and or 317-213-7031. 317-213-7031. I'll let you know when this season is starting, and I'll send your information over to our president. His name is Chris Light.
Okay, Brittany, folks want to contact you, learn more, maybe get involved either financially or play or help in one form or another, be a volunteer. How can they contact you to do that?
People can contact me at my email, b.mont37@gmail.com. That's a good way just to get this thing started. I didn't have any other thing. This is very, 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 very new. So.
Yeah, and you realize you said this could take a couple of years before this gets off the ground. But
yeah, I mean, also, Micah, to answer one of your questions real fast, the World Cup typically takes place in like January, February, or March, as far as, and then as far as like on the local level, like people typically train from September to April, just to answer your question. So from earlier.
Yeah, and if you contact Brittany, she's posted a link to a YouTube video that explains how the game is played, as well as a doc file that the specific rules for blind cricket players. So
yeah, and I do plan to send out a invite sometime here relatively soon. Like I said, hosting some international players so that you guys can ask more questions about their experiences, how they got started, a lot more questions because they're a lot more experienced. So hopefully people would be interested in that. Understanding that it's more than just a game, but also a big cross-cultural aspect to it as well. That's exciting.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we reach 1 hour. We will make one final chance if anyone has a question for any of the guests who've taken time out.
I have another question for Brittany. This is Ron. I'm interested in this blind cricket, but you mentioned culturally. So some of the countries around the world are not as adept to blind services as we are here in America. Now, I want to know when you said this kind of transcends from a sport to cultural in that it helps them to become recognized that the blind people in their countries have capacity. I want to know if a lot of blind people benefit from that aspect of the game to their countrymen and women knowing that, well, if they can play this sport, then can they also, walk down the street, be teachers, be this. And also, if the World Cup is international, would the team here from America have to go to another country?
Yes, definitely. Being able to show that they can play and travel, and this has definitely helped the community understand that blind people can do things, and they it definitely helps in their independence factor for sure, and it brings awareness to their communities, so that is definitely, it's a huge thing for them. And then also if the World Cup was held in another country, you would travel to the other country.
Now, are those broadcast on the internet, Brittany? Can someone watch the blind cricket competitions?
There's so many resources out there. You have so many people who have YouTube channels. Like I said, I plan to get some pretty top people involved in this conference that I want to host. So it'd be really interesting if you guys could come out and ask them questions, because I kind of want to have some different aspects of it, just like some viewpoints from a regular cricketer to the management side, to a woman, and then diversify it as much as I possibly can without overwhelming it.
I have a question.
Okay, Lee, go ahead, sir.
Brittany?
Yes.
You mentioned something that kind of caught my attention when you said that B1 and the different levels. The B1 player, the totally blind player, they can't participate fully in the game. They have to have someone run for them. Now, the persons that run for them, are they sighted? Are they blindfolded? Or, how is that person chosen to run for the person blind?
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're either just a B2 or a B3 player. But to make it, more, fair, the way the points are scored is actually doubled in that regard.
Call it wraps, but I want to thank all of you for coming out and sharing the knowledge. This will be archived and posted on the NFB of Indiana website at nfb-in.org.